with the thing that I borrowed to over Christmas.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. So Matt, you're a bollocks.
Yeah. And you sacked.
Right, there you go. That's down for the record.
Okay.
Right.
Right. Okay, I thought about what we said yesterday.
Yeah.
And
did it make some sense to you?
It kind of did, because I was actually playing with a Skype recorder thingy, and I'd left it on, so I'd actually did record the conversation yesterday. I didn't mean to, but I did.
That's
so
cool.
I listened back to it, and then it made sense when I listened to it again.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so I think that this natural dynamic networks thing is probably a little bit just a made-up thing that I just came up with. But what I do think is very interesting...
You realise that PhD is about making something up.
Yeah, yeah, I know that, yeah. And,
that's okay.
Okay, so yeah, maybe there is such a thing as a natural network, but I think the definition that I'd written down there was a bit wishy-washy, and which...
Well spotted.
Yeah. but what I think is probably the more interesting thing is the human part of it, so the human networks.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing that's actually really interesting. Okay, so there might be other types of networks, but why do we care about them anyway?
Yeah.
You know, so maybe there's such a thing as a human, say things like human interaction networks, or some. That's interesting because we can do something with it because humans like to talk to each other,
right,
and communicate.
Yeah, and why is that not a social network?
That probably is a social network. I think it is a social network.
Right.
But I wonder if there's something else as well which isn't necessarily social. Okay, so it depends what the definition of a social network is.
Go on then.
So if a definition of a social network is your group of friends or your associations with other people, perhaps that's a social network. But what about the network that isn't about your social interactions? What about the networks that's just your proximity to other people? Is that a social network or is that just a proximity thing?
All right, so you could call it the social proximity network or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, maybe. Yeah,
yeah. And then you can have different instances of these. Like that are to do with different characteristics, and then you could classify them under a particular heading.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Or you mean, so like...
You could call them whatever you call them. What did you call them?
I called them human interaction networks.
Yeah, so my human interaction networks, right? And then you can just, like, subclass them.
Yeah, okay.
Anyway,
carry on. Okay, so I think that's probably what's actually really interesting. Yeah,
right.
I'm not actually interested in things like animal networks or anything like that. Perhaps that's another thing that could be related, but not that interesting.
Yeah.
Because animals don't really need to send each other emails.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And so, so I came up with this definition of natural networks, which is just kind of bollocks, really.
Yeah.
And then I thought, well, hold on. Actually, what's interesting is the human interaction or acquaintance or whatever, some sort of networks which need to be classified.
Right.
So how is this different from the way other people's view networks, which is the question that we said yesterday, or you said yesterday? And the stuff I've come across so far, they've studied small bits of it. So, for example, well, not small bits, large bits of it, but not the same. So small world phenomenon that Travers and Milgram talked about, that's about the small world thing, and that's something that people have discovered, and that's, okay, so we know that that's a property of certain networks, and it is probably true in most cases. So what would be nice is to say, well, is this true in all cases?
Okay.
But what other things are there? Is there something else about these networks that we haven't sort of seen yet? So there's a small world thing. That's great. But what else is there that's probably easier to detect? And so...
Do you have any sense of what those might be?
No, not really. This is it. I think... this is the problem. This is the biggest problem that I've just going through writing this is I don't really know what it is that I might find or might do. What will it be that we discover?
Okay.
So that's the biggest problem. And the overriding biggest problem is this isn't something that I know anything about really much. All I know really is about what I've read a few bits and what I think is a good idea. I think it's the idea. It's not really.
Let's jump ahead and then we can come back to this.
Yeah.
So if there is certain properties in there, like the small world property, right? What would you use them for if you found them?
Well, this is okay. So this is coming back to the end bit, which is what's the point of it in the first place?
Yeah.
This is the biggest problem, actually. This is the hugest problem because this is the workshop I went to in St. Petersburg. This is what we talked about in there.
Right.
This was like, why are we bothering? You know, and there was no real consensus as to why do we bother. The only real thing was that it could be used to augment existing systems to relieve the pressure on the existing infrastructure, which could be so that might be quite valid. So for example, in a city, say if everybody's subscribing to a certain TV show which is downloadable from the network, that's going to put pressure on the 3G towers at the time when it's released. So how about augmenting it slightly by sharing stuff around the population on a peer-to-peer basis. But then I got to thinking, well, hold on. We started to talk about having all these sort of devices. Everything's going to be everything's going to be in, what's it called? The Internet of Things, and everything's going to be there. And at the moment, the infrastructure probably can't cope with, what is it, 10 to the 27 addresses per square metre that IPv6 will provide. So if you imagine that there's even one device per square metre trying to connect to the same access point, that's going to be problematic, perhaps.
Okay.
This is sort of clutching at straws a little bit here, but what if the way of communicating, if you could, for stuff that's non-essential, that isn't, so the delay-tolerant type stuff, so is there an argument to say that the infrastructure that exists currently and that's planned for the future is not going to be able to cope with a massive amount of data throughput?
Well, I wonder if you can take two sides to this, right? So you can make the argument slightly more compelling. So you can talk about scale. But scale is such a difficult thing to argue over. It's like pick the point in the future that satisfies the argument you have at the moment. Right? And that's fine, but you get people picking holes in that, saying, is that really viable? You know, are people going to have nano dust on the floor? And, and you get those arguments. And I think it's still a valid argument. I think it's absolutely right, right? You can pick predictors and say, look, we're doing blue skies research and we want to be able to find the infrastructure for X, Y, and Z. And I think we should list those things. But there are probably other instances of more relevant things now that we could also include, like burst situations. So extreme event, critical, you know, emergency service shit. So the mobile tower system goes down after 9/11 because everybody's trying to contact everybody else and you can't do that. Now, don't mention 9/11. But you can talk in general terms about when there is a critical event, you get a burst of activity, right? And the infrastructure clearly isn't balanced to be able to deal with that now. Now, telecom providers will do all sorts of rejigging to make it work. But is there an alternative for certain sets of messages? You know? Like, I want to know if my mate on the third floor is okay.
You might not be able to make a voice call to him, but you might be able to send him a message.
Yeah, so there's like, and you might be able to use also. Now, the problem with those scenarios is the normal flow of people is different. So you can't use, so you have to be able to pick certain, do you see what I'm saying? If you can pick scenarios where,
do you think it's important to pick realistic scenarios that were a more a day-to-day thing though? That's the argument for that, is that what's the point of doing this when it's just a one-off thing that might not ever happen?
I mean, the alternative argument you could present is, look, you're always open to an attack. Like, well, at the moment, you can do that by just sending it into the internet and bringing it back again.
Exactly,
because, like, at work, there's Wi-Fi everywhere. Right.
Actually,
but airports, there isn't. You know, walking around, I mean, most scenarios, there isn't free Wi-Fi everywhere. You know, and it costs to send text messages. So you can focus in on just simple pragmatics. I want to be able to send free messages. Using the available free Bluetooth and associated wireless infrastructure.
I think that's, to me, that seems like a really good idea and something I'd love to be able to play with, you know? But I'm not sure, is that a valid thing? Is that a good argument to say, okay, this is why we're doing this? This is a problem we want to solve? Or is there too many arguments against it saying, well, hold on, there's the infrastructure, there's internet there, you'll get there sometime, so you might as well just do it then.
Yeah, but it's not free. And it's not free. You know, right, I mean, you can always partition a problem in such a way that you can say, actually, I'm not interested in that scenario because... And I think I'd be quite... I'm quite confident that you could pick those sort of social, everyday... Right, I'd like to be able to send the equivalent of free text messages, you know, right, to certain people, understanding, you know, I can use carriers.
Yeah.
Like that, you know, that message carriers and transmissions and various other bits and pieces to try and make it work. right? And I think that's a very compelling. It's parasitic networking.
Yeah, parasitic. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, I suppose because one of the other things they talked about in this DTN workshop was that it really needs to augment existing stuff to make it better, because otherwise nobody will adopt it anyway. But
yeah.
Maybe that's not the focus of our stuff, but keeping that in mind, there's no reason why you can have a combination of that sort of network. So like in an airport where only one or two people might be using the Wi-Fi, perhaps they're
access points. I mean, Google at the moment has got this real-time search stuff coming online. So they do real-time synthesis of tweets and various other bits and pieces for you. And they'll even do location-based search. So, you know, and they're all really valid things to be doing. They might be in search of a market, right? And you can still be in search of a bit of a problem here, right? As long as you have some justification, right? And you can say that nobody's done it. It's a bit like pure mathematics, you know? People just do stuff because nobody solved that problem. And then, actually, 10 years down the line, or 20 or 50, that's relevant.
Could have used that,
So, but they don't pick the problems randomly either. They say, look, here's an interesting problem that other people have identified.
Yeah.
Right, now if you use the DTN community and justify it through the DTN community, that's grand.
That's valid, yeah.
And then when we come to an external examiner, I pick someone out of that community who at least is sympathetic to the problem space. You know, you don't pick random folks who are going to, you know, no PhD examiner will let you off with making a completely specious claim, right? But you do want someone that isn't going to say, okay, yeah, but there's no point in doing that.
Yeah.
Right? Because, you know, there's no point in doing lots of things in research, except there is, if you can think a bit more carefully about it. You know, so let's put this in the context of we'll pick someone from the DTN type community who is sympathetic to that sort of messaging and approach.
Yeah.
And justify it through that sort of free messaging, you know, being able to...
Yeah.
Do certain... I guess, I mean, there are properties of these messages you want. I mean, they might be delay tolerant, but you do want time bounds on them. I mean, they have relevance characteristics. This message is relevant for the next 20 minutes. Or this message is relevant while I'm here.
Yeah. Which... I was also thinking about, okay, so sort of a tangent to that. I reread the initial proposal stuff that was sent to Workset.
Yeah.
And whilst it's kind of completely different, there's actually, a lot of it's very, very similar. Because how about using this as more of a, if you think about this whole context thing, well, how does that information get transmitted around your network?
Yeah,
how does it follow you about? And how do you tell the environment that you're in to do it?
Yeah.
And thinking again about all of these devices that are going to be that this is the future point thing again.
Yeah.
How are they going? How are you going to communicate with those? How are they going to connect to everything else?
Yeah.
Are they going to? How are they going to talk to each other? How are they going to talk to the building next door?
Yeah.
And I just wondered whether we could fit that idea in as well. So, because everybody around me is working on context stuff and situation stuff, and I kind of thinking, well, hold on, shouldn't I be doing something like that? Because that's what I started doing, and then I seem to hop to something else, and then to something else.
Yeah. You just have an agile brain, and we have to basically.
I know. Really want to go home this Christmas.
Yeah.
The third one in a row, not going home, saying, "Well, actually, I've changed my ideas again, and I might be doing something like this." I want to say, "Yeah, I know exactly what I'm doing.
I know what I'm going to be submitting next Christmas."
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So do I. For my own sanity, I'm trying to get. All the PhD students.
Yeah.
Hence, I'm you know, I'm not got any teaching or anything for 9 months from January.
Yeah, that's cool.
So I'm just, all I'm doing is research.
Wicked.
Right? I'm just seeing PhD students writing shed loads of papers.
Yeah, okay.
And I want to get all the PhD students out there ready to act. That's my thing. Because I've taken on so many, there's no way I could, I mean, I'm crap as it is with so much stuff. So I just went to the head of school and said, actually, can I have 9 months to fix this?
Okay.
So that's cool. So I'm going to sit on you.
Okay, cool. Right. So what do I need to concentrate on, do you literally. Think? No, that'd be quite uncomfortable and a bit weird. But the problem I have is seeing at what point is the stuff that I should really be concentrating. Should I be thinking about a big picture thing where it all fits in nicely, or should I be looking at very something very small, like simply it comes down to the fact that I might discover something interesting about some aspect of human, the real world human networks. For example, movement patterns. I might find something that says, okay, well, there are these distinct patterns and we can use them to do this.
Yeah, I think you need to narrow down on that.
Right, okay. Because right. That's what I'm actually really interested in. Because when I was thinking back to my undergraduate stuff,
yeah,
that project I did was all about people moving about finding stuff.
Yeah.
And that's what I was really interested in.
Right, and I think that's where you need to focus. I think you need to go down to some detail stuff.
Yeah.
Right, where you can code and deliver and have numbers and
yeah.
get information and get people around here to be trying it out.
Mm.
I mean, there's Bluetooth spotter software. You know about this that we have through Clarity? There's actually some, it's a yoke you can stick on here and it just logs Bluetooth signals it sees.
Oh, okay, that's quite cool.
Right, so you can, if you got everybody in Castle, which shouldn't be too difficult to install this piece of software and say, I'll do it for you as long as you give me the logs of the things you spot.
Yeah.
And you can have, you know, and you have, obviously have the IDs.
Yeah.
You'll be able to build up a pattern map.
Yes, and because the other stuff that I was doing, before we went to this EDTN thing, I started playing around with, I know it was another project, but it wasn't, it is related, and it is and it is something that would really help, honestly. Is this whole idea of tracking people around and getting a more detailed location fixed, because all of the stuff so far has been very broad, so it's all been cell IDs, which are huge.
Yeah.
So you can't really detect that two people are in range of each other unless you're making some assumptions about they can communicate through the cell.
Yeah.
But it's not very reliable. But the stuff that I got Tom to walk around with an N95 for a week, basically, just to see what the data would look like. And basically, I saw him walking to and from town every day. But it picked up, like, I don't know, a few thousand access points and a few tons and tons of Bluetooth devices. And
yeah, well, this is place
GPS traces. It's the same thing. And then I found other ways of getting location. So I think, basically, even the stuff that Kevin is doing, that stuff, with they've logged all the access points.
Kevin?
Kevin McCarthy, is it?
Oh, right, yeah.
He's in Clarity. We can get more information from the data. If I can have all their data, not that I need it, their data, but you can get this location thing. And I think the location bit, I really want to do the location stuff, so I want to find something
So there you go. Like, this ties it down, right?
Yeah.
Let's focus on movement,
mm-hmm.
right? Focus on movement patterns to try and see what recurring patterns are going to be going into there. Now, we're going to have to find out. There's a whole pile of what sort of data mining are we going to do to find patterns?
Yeah, right. This is the bit that I'm not sure about.
So. Right, so but that's research, right? You have to find details and find people that can help you and stuff like that. So that's why. But let's look at how do we collect some data, but sufficiently large and in sets of constrained environments. So it'd be great if we could do the Bluetooth log for the whole of Castle.
Yeah.
For a week.
Yeah.
Term time.
Yeah.
Right. Because that would give you unbelievable information.
Yeah, well, I don't know if it would, because it's very, because I'm thinking more on a bigger scale, you see, which isn't very useful because I haven't got the access to the people to do it. But I'm thinking more of the campus wide or even city, not city wide, would be hard because you have lots of people. But I don't think if it's just Bluetooth stuff in a building, I don't think that's
You don't think that's going to give you.
I don't think it's broad enough. I don't think if you're talking about movement patterns, people move. They don't just move in a building, they move all over the place.
Oh, yeah. But how do you constrain it so you can solve the problem
in
12 and a half months?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, this is the bit I'm really confused about, is my biggest worry is that I don't have the background in anything, really, maths-wise or anything.
Let's not worry about that, right?
Yeah.
We'll be able to pick the specific skill sets you need as we go along.
Mm.
You're exceedingly bright.
No, I'm good at...
You're good at saying making stuff.
Saying stuff sound good, but not actually really probably underlyingly being good, I think.
Join my club, right?
Yeah.
No, but, I mean, you find people to help you, right? So if we need a statistician to look at the data, we have a whole school of stats.
Yeah.
Right? And there are some really nice people. We have the social network group through Porrick Cunningham. It's doing like network analysis.
Oh, okay. Yeah, see, that's probably, I should probably talk to those guys actually, right? Find out what they're doing.
Yeah, so talk to the guy from that. And we have Davide, who can do the maths coming out of his fucking ears if we can keep him.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, he's going to get to limit, probably, I guess.
Right, yeah, I don't know.
I mean, he's come to the end of the viable contract time for us, so that's a shame, right? But you know, so he, you know, he's got the maths. And even if he went, he'd still help.
Yeah.
Because he's such a fucking nice guy.
He's such a nice guy.
He's just scarily nice guy.
He's just really good, yeah.
Yeah, but he's also really good. So as long as we know what we're asking for,
yeah,
we can say, this is what we want out of this data. We can then find the people to help us.
Yeah.
Right? Because you don't have to do everything in a PhD. You know, imagine like
but I'm getting to the point now, it's like, well, what will I be doing?
Right.
Will I just be, end up just probably coding something up and that will be in it and someone else? Because if
okay, right, just take a step, real step back here. Yeah. What's a PhD? Right?
Yeah.
A PhD is research training.
Yeah.
Full stop. Okay? It's not Nobel Prize.
I know that. I understand
right.
It's
research training. So if you come out of it with, I had an idea, right? Based on my own working hard, digging around in various areas, I came up with some observations. I put together an experimental framework. I got the right skilled people to come and help me. I did the coding. I analyzed the data as a consequence. I came up with the patterns, right? But I needed other people's help to help me get the data out. And then I wrote, oh, Jesus, that's your PhD.
Right. Yeah, right. See, when you put it like that, it sounds fine. But then when I go away and think about it, I think, oh, God, you know, I don't actually think I've done anything.
Nobody feels like
that. No.
Everyone who submits a PhD goes, I'm not sure it's good enough, actually.
Yeah.
You know? You know, Jesus, Ado was crapping himself coming into the Viva. Yeah. You know? Yeah, his was grand.
Mm.
And, you know, he was saying to me like 2 weeks before, all I did was like a few pictures of some data.
Yeah.
Right? And I go, no, that's not what you did. Right? Right? You went and looked at how everybody else does this and how they interact. And you came up with a sweet spot between this and this. Right? And provided the right interface for being able to work up through that. And then did the analysis to prove that it was viable.
Mm.
Right? Oh, okay. Right?
Yeah. Right. I suppose afterwards, when you've done it all, you say, oh, yeah, that's why. Right. Yeah. But when you're doing it, it doesn't seem that way.
Back on this thing here.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So I really think, rather than big picture shit is grand for a long time, but it's detail. Right? It's detail now.
Yeah.
You're interested in movement patterns, right? Extracting movement patterns from everyday life and using those for routing purposes.
Yeah. But I think that there's other stuff that can help to do it, such as some context information as well.
Yeah.
About if you know something about the individual in this thing.
But see, that already starts to set up your experimental framework. You do it blind first.
Right.
Right, so you do... I mean, in the experiment, you capture everything. So you capture information about the individual and movement information.
Mm.
But you apply analysis over just the movement information.
And then
maybe do a simulation in terms of messaging. Then you take context into it and see if you get an improvement.
Right. Yeah, I see. Yeah, okay. Right? That's a good point.
Yeah, so you because it's not obvious, despite what you might say, that context will help.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? And it's not actually a bad result to say context isn't useful all the time, because everybody claims context is always useful.
But they never really come up with a reason why.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right? And then if you did an experiment like that and you showed it was him, maybe it reduced on average the number of hops by 2.
Yeah.
Right? Well, in a highly dynamic ad hoc network where you don't have control over it, reducing the number of hops is a really good thing because it reduces failure rate. Right?
Yeah.
So, you know, so there's all sorts of... You can start to reason, but you can't do that reasoning until you have the two sets of data side by side. You go, actually, no, it doesn't make any difference.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
why?
It might not make any difference whatsoever.
Right, and why does it make no difference?
Mm.
Right? And then you ask that question, and that's where the depth of your thesis comes in, is when you start to ask questions about why from the data.
Right. Okay. Okay, so...
Going back to this.
So, if we're concentrating on a smaller part of it rather than this waffly part that I sort of...
That's your chapter one.
Yeah.
Broad justification and rationale, and
okay,
you dig into a bit of DTNs and all that sort of stuff, and
you
come out with this. My hypothesis is that human movement patterns will provide a underlying model for transmission of data on ad hoc networks.
Yes. Yeah. I don't know. I feel that there's a huge gap of knowledge missing where I need to find out more stuff about this, because I'm sure someone must have done something like that. Possibly. they must have done something like it.
Nothing new under the sun, right?
Yeah, exactly. But I wonder, I'll have to just have a look around with that. Because I'm sure there's some stuff that...
I mean, look hard, but don't look for something that isn't there.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, so it's possible somebody's done, it's pretty probable someone's done something similar.
Yeah.
But it's very unlikely they've done specifically what you're interested in, right? And if you can constrain your question and reference them, not make the same mistakes they've made, learn from there and progress yours,
yeah,
that's fine, right?
Yeah. Yeah, oh, yeah, I see what you mean.
Yeah, you know, I mean, unless we're looking for the next, what do you call it, next fundamental particle, or the link between quantum theory and relativity, right, where the race is really important because it's worth a Nobel Prize,
yeah,
right? It's not a competition.
I just want to get my PhD.
Exactly.
Be done with it, you know, or do something else after that. I don't even think about that. But okay, so what I really need to do then is distill this down into
follow
something
the Exodus.
More.
You either go to St Andrews or Tasmania.
What's that?
Follow the Exodus.
Sod that, I'm not going to Tasmania. Yeah.
You don't fancy Australia?
Yeah, I'd love Australia, not Tasmania, I don't think.
Oh, I don't know.
I don't know. Oh, I've never been there, so I can't really say. But
it's an island the size of Ireland with 500,000 people on it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure, so it'd be great. And everything's very expensive.
What?
Everything's more expensive than Ireland, as far as I could tell.
Oh, Jesus, no.
No?
God, no. I spent a month in Australia, and then I was in Australia recently.
Mm.
Jesus.
Oh, yeah. Did you go to Tasmania recently?
Yeah.
Oh, right.
That was really beautiful. Fuck.
Did you go down to where Aaron is?
It's small.
Is it?
I didn't go to where Aaron was. I just went to the main city, which has the size of Cork.
Right, okay.
Right. And it was just like, I mean, it was lovely. Jesus, like no traffic. You know, the traffic act, that, like traffic jams are like 3 minutes in the morning, between 7 minutes to 9 and 9 o'clock, you know.
Right.
That sort of stuff. A completely different planet.
Yeah.
But completely Australia and so not expensive. Oh, Jesus. I went out for the absolute top restaurant. Was taken out by the university there. Gorgeous dinner. Lunch, you know, wine, 3 courses, 2 of us. But, I mean, just like, you know, almost Michelin star quality. Right. What do you reckon was the price?
God knows. What is it? Dollar? Is it in...
Australia? Oh, no, in euros. In euros.
Euros. I don't know. You'd probably pay a couple of hundred, maybe. I don't know.
60?
That's quite nice.
right? The cost of living is... Petrol's the same price, cars are roughly the same price. That's from my trip and thing. But eating out, food, beer, general going out stuff, just taxes, just completely different.
That's pretty nice then.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, we have lots of contacts in Sydney and Brisbane, which are great cities. I think if I was choosing one, I'd probably go for either Melbourne or Brisbane. Sydney was huge, and it's beautiful, it's cool, brilliant, but I just thought it was just that bit too big for me.
Yeah, well, I just went there for his holiday, but
yeah,
it was nice but expensive.
Yeah, Sydney was expensive.
Mm.
See, Sydney was a different kettle of fish. I was up in Cairns to start with, which was just beautiful. God, it was like the middle of winter and it was 22 degrees, you know?
It's cool. Oh, it's nice, isn't it? I couldn't think of any reason not to go to Australia, actually. I could think of no reason not to live apart from the distance from home.
Well, actually, intriguingly, I was talking to some guy in Cairns. And I was going, God, it's gorgeous here. You know, there's a crappy university, the James Cook University. And I was, you know, I was just chatting away to them. And he goes, yeah, lots of people say they want to live in Cairns. He goes, they come in winter. I can't do the accent, I'll stop. And he says, and it's lovely. He says, but in the summer, right, it's 40 degrees and 95% humidity. And they've gone within a year. Because there are bugs and there are snakes and there are all this. Says,
yeah.
So unless you're used to it. So that's why I think Brisbane, Melbourne, they get lovely summers. You know, 30, 32, 35 degrees. They have real winters as well. But they don't have this humidity problem and they don't have this tropical rainforest problem.
Yeah, I've got a friend that lives in Brisbane, actually.
Brisbane's cool, and there are so many jobs there. I have so many contacts in Brisbane. If you're ever looking for a job.
Okay, cool.
Anyway, we're moving on.
Yeah, so if this all goes well, you can get me a job in Brisbane. Excellent.
And they do want nurses as well.
Yeah, well, there you go. That's perfect.
Yeah.
Forget all this, because this is all waffle, really, because this is just... talked about. So what do I need to do now? What do you reckon? So I need...
What I think we should do now, right, is actually think up, construct an experiment, and do it.
Right.
Right? A short-term, 3 to 4 week experiment.
Okay.
Right? Where we actually get something out. And at the end of it, we can say, okay, this has taken us down a blind alley. This is actually making progress in this direction. This is what we need to do next.
Okay.
It needs to be a small, constrained experiment.
Yes. Okay.
That's about collecting movement patterns.
Yep.
And some context.
I think we can shortcut it by asking, with your contacts in the Clarity, to say, please, can I have some of your data, please? Kevin. Because I think I found a way of getting an awful lot of Wi-Fi points to the GPS location from some service somewhere.
Yeah.
So, and if we can, and if they've collected Wi-Fi things for, say we get a set of all just the people in Castle, that.
Yeah.
And get a week's worth of data from them.
Yeah.
Presuming anybody's actually uploaded their data and it's actually working. I think that I can track people around roughly. Okay. Given the Wi-Fi points, the Bluetooth, well, not necessarily the Bluetooth, but Bluetooth is useful for other things. So the Wi-Fi points locates you, and the GPS track, if there is any, which there probably isn't. The Bluetooth is proximity, and what else did they collect? I'm not sure what else they collected.
Yeah.
Those two, and then using that and using this online database of getting the GPS locations, which are roughly...
Yeah, pretty good.
But they're fairly accurate, and they're within a few hundred metres or whatever, which is probably... more fine grained than a lot of the stuff already.
Yeah.
And it has cell towers anyway for confirmation. So I think I don't even have to do anything. I just need to get the data, parse it out, and then start looking at it, basically.
Right. Okay. Brilliant. I'm delighted.
Okay.
Right. Let's do that. But we have to have a set of questions we're going to ask of the data.
Right. Okay. Cool.
So you can't just parse it and go, it looks lovely.
Yeah, it looks lovely.
What were we actually looking for?
Okay.
Right. So... This is a little bit like some of the stuff Davide does, or some of the social network analysis stuff. We're looking for structures in the data. What are they? So, I would. I'd probably have a couple of conversations this week. Go and chat to. Is it Pragma? Pragma.
Oh, Prag Sharma.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He is a PhD, but he's like the research director, admin type, not director, research officer for the network, Clique.
Right.
So he knows who's doing what. He also has the background stuff. So he might be a good talking point.
Mm.
Okay. So I think that talk to him and say, roughly, I'm trying to do this. I'm going to have this set of data. I'm trying to understand how I might route messages around the place. I'm looking for recurring patterns. And try and characterize these patterns, right? Because there might be structural patterns.